Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural, and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Folks, thanks for coming along tonight. At late notice, we put on a function on Italy because two significant Italians are in the country and a lot of interesting things are happening in Italy. So we've got two speakers tonight, Luca Varda and Giulia Massotti. So I'll introduce them both briefly. I've asked Luca to start off talking about contemporary Italian politics, and he'll speak for about 25 minutes. Then Giulia will talk a bit less time on Italy and contemporary Europe, and then we'll go to question and discussion and conclude no later than 7 o'clock. So Luca Varda is CEO and director of the Institute of European Democrats. He's responsible for Europe and North America at the Democratic Party in Italy. He has a number of qualifications, including an MA at the LSE in London and a BA at the University of London. He's worked in various places. He's advised several Italian ministers and private companies and also the European Parliament. Giulia Massotti is educated at the College of Europe and at Roma Tre University, currently project manager at the Institute of European Democrats, and she's also worked in the European Parliament. So we're going to lead off with Luca, go to Giulia, and then we'll take questions and discussion. Luca, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to talk about this very, very complicated situation that is developing in Italy, as you might know. So it's an honor really to be here at this prestigious institute to discuss with you the outcomes of the last general election in Italy that took place in February 24th and 25th, and the prospects of Italian politics after this election. Let me start saying that I feel a bit guilty because when I met Gerard in Rome only a few weeks ago before the election, I gave him assurances, remember, of a very easy result, say now. No problem. This time, unlike other times, is going to be easy. Democratic Party is going to win big, majority on its own, or coalition with centrist party led by outgoing Prime Minister Mario Monti. And you can bet on it. And as you might know, things didn't quite turn out that way. So I'm here also to make up for that. Just to say, I was not the only one. It was a shock for the country, the results, because all the polls in the last 2 years gave a quite clear outcome for the elections. And so I will also try to explain why all the expectations didn't turn out to be correct. The outcome of this election, and indeed Italian politics more generally, is still really a work in progress, and there is still no end to the story as we're speaking today. We are in a stalemate, and therefore, I can't say anything conclusive about it, unfortunately. But the last Saturday, we re-elect our President of the Republic, Giorgio Napolitano, and this is going to be probably a decisive step in finding a way out of the cul-de-sac in which two major factors pushed us. One, the honestly very complicated numbers that came out in Parliament after the elections. So roughly three major parties unable to collaborate, and also in a very confused strategy pursued by the main party, the winner of the election, the Democratic Party. So the combination of these two factors led to a very deep stalemate. Napolitano's re-election on Saturday as president is historic for several reasons. It is the first time in the history of the Italian Republic that a president has been re-elected for a second term. But what happened 2 days ago is not a sign of strength of the system, of the political system. It's actually a sign of extreme weakness. weakness mainly of political parties, their leadership, their way of campaigning, of communicating, their shape, the structure, and their out-of-touch, rigid bureaucracies. This re-election comes as a proof that our political system is changing, maybe temporarily, maybe more for the long term, too early to say, but it's changing from a parliamentarian to a presidential republic, de facto. The powers of the head of state are largely ceremonials, been largely ceremonials for decades, a guarantor of the constitution and national unity. But they are becoming those of a real power broker of Italian politics. It happened when this president, Napolitano, pushed Silvio Berlusconi to resign in November 2011 because of external political and financial pressures, even if Berlusconi still had a majority in parliament. So went outside of the rules, because as long as there is a majority in parliament, the prime minister should stay. But he was pushed out by the president of the republic. It happened soon after when the president installed Mario Monti as prime minister, a prime minister of a technocratic government. You might know, we might speak a little bit about this. And it's happening now, when basically the president is being asked by parties to find a solution out of this crisis. Political parties are unable to elect a prime minister at the moment. They were unable to elect even a new president. So and to show that the phase, the moment of technocracy, of grand coalition is over. They were unable to do this. So they re-elected Napolitano to do exactly this. Since parties cannot form a coherent majority, nor they're able to sell their own voters the need for a grand coalition, and thus an agreement with their political enemies, they asked the President of the Republic to do it. So the President is emerging as a giant in a field of weakened, confused, even self-destructive parties. So how did we get to this point? The election that called 50 million Italians to the polls on February 24th and 25th has been at the center of attention of governments, media, economic institutions in Europe and beyond. It was seen as an important step in the resolution of the Eurozone crisis, and maybe an important step contributing to the end of this crisis. Brussels and all European capitals predicted and indeed endorsed the success of the Democratic Party led by Pierluigi Bersani and Scelta Civica, so Civic Choice, led by Mario Monti, and a coalition government by those two forces expected to stay the course on economic, social reforms, a government moderately pro-austerity, pro-markets, and strongly pro-European. All the polls would indicate this. The morning of the election, the morning of February 25th, polls gave the Democratic Party 35% of the vote, Monti at 12%, Berlusconi's coalition at 25%, and the new anti-system, some say populistic, but movement led by comedian Beppe Grillo, it's called Five Star Movement, at 18%. So a PD strong majority in the lower house, although maybe not in the Senate, given the different electoral law, but with Monti as a junior partner able to secure a majority in the Senate, was in the cards. Why the difference between the House and the Senate, which has proved crucial in these elections? The electoral law main features are we have a proportional system with a threshold at 4%, so parties under 4% don't get representation in Parliament. And we have a majority bonus nationally in the House and regionally in the Senate. What it means? It means that the biggest coalition in the House nationally, even for one vote more than the other, take 55% of the seats, so have a automatic majority in the House. While in the Senate, this bonus is given on a regional base. So you have to win one region and you get a certain number of extra senators. This, of course, makes the things more confused and complicated. So what were we all expecting? A Bersani-led government, with Monti ready to become Speaker of the Senate or even President of the Republic, and as a consequence, the end of the Berlusconi era, the dominance of Italian politics that started 20 years ago. This was the morning, and after a few hours, the results came as a shock for leaders, media, analysts, all public. The results were PD plus CEL, which is a smaller leftist party. So the PD coalition, 29.6%. Berlusconi's coalition, 29.2%. Five Star Movement, 26%. Monti, 10.5%. And the extreme left at 2%. So, pretty complicated. Translated into seats, the PD gained a full majority in the House, but only because taking the bonus only for a mere 0.4%, so which in total numbers made above 200,000 voters over Berlusconi, very, very tiny. And regarding the Senate, the weak support for both Monti and the PD made any majority impossible, with these two parties running short of 20 senators, and the unexpected election of more than 80 senators from the Grillo's movement. It was clearly a change election. In the last 2008 election, Berlusconi won over 40% of the vote, but the PD got a strong 33.5% in 2008. In this election, 40% of voters changed their vote. So I don't know how to define this, but it's not as a change election. And it was a double defeat, both for the left, the Democrats lost 3.5 million votes, and for the right, with Berlusconi losing 6 million votes. Although the perception made the PD bad result even more visible, because the PD was expected to win, while Berlusconi was expected to have a poor result. So this sometimes doesn't explain the death of Berlusconi's loss, 6 million votes in only 5 years. Grillo, on the other side, took 8.5 million votes, clearly drawing from left, right, and voters that had abstained in the past. This led to where we are now, a three-party system, roughly equivalent in numbers and totally incompatible one with the other politically. So, one could say that after the elections, nothing really happened. And on the surface, this would be true. After 2 months, exactly 2 months, we still have the Monti technocratic government in place. We have the same president of the republic just re-elected. No clear prospect of a lasting government. Parliament has not produced a single piece of legislation yet. So it seems that the elections were useless. And this has led to the democracy deficit widening in the eyes of the already disillusioned Italian public. And yet, I believe this was in reality deeply transformational elections for Italy's political and party system, for the underground trends in society that I believe will be replicated in other elections across Europe. Maybe we'll have 2 minutes to at the end of this presentation. I think there are common traits that we will see in Europe in the next election, next wave of elections. In Rome, the political landscape is already changed, but voters mostly demolished the old system without funding a new one. It is, therefore, a transitional election. So let me, I don't know, from your side, let me give you a small background. So where the elections started, and just a brief look at the players in this election. I would say from 2008, last election, to 2011, Berlusconi, his PDL party, Popolo delle Libertà, and the Northern League, won a huge majority, with the PD still coming to terms with the defeat, change of leadership, and the difficulty of merging different political cultures. PD is a merger of different, the Catholic, centrist, Republican, and social democratic cultures. The mood changed in 2010, when personal scandals reached a new record for Berlusconi, and a financial crisis started to hit the country. Berlusconi's approval rate started to decline steeply, and by the end of the year, all polls agreed that the PD had overtaken the PDL-Lega coalition. So roughly at the end of 2010, and as I said, till the day of the election, all opinion polls said that the progressive coalition was ahead. The PDL also suffered a split of a centrist wing, accelerating the perception of an imminent demise of the party. 2011 was a very difficult year for Prime Minister Berlusconi. A financial crisis became an economic crisis in Italy, record levels of unemployment, and the GDP decline. fear, negativity gripped the Italian public, and Berlusconi proved to be unable to tackle it. The Berlusconi dream of richness for all, of low taxes, his own myth of self-made successful men, a myth that Italians enthusiastically embraced during the booming 90s, was now useless. I would say even counterproductive in terms of the crisis. He became out of touch with the Italian public. On top of that, he was perceived interested only in hiding personal scandals. The pressure of the financial markets and the risk of a default for the country reached crisis point in mid-2011, our summer, July, August. After that, Berlusconi relied on his parliamentary majority, but was forced to resign following pressure from President Napolitano in November 2011. So, exit Berlusconi comes Mario Monti, former EU commissioner, an academic, dean of Bocconi University in Milan. He becomes prime minister, and his technocratic government without a single politician applied strong austerity policies, cuts to the national budget, cuts to funds for local government, pension reforms, labor reform, reorganization of bureaucracy, introduction of a property tax on the first home. These policies, supported and praised by the European Union, improved the country's budget and its position on financial markets, but deepened the economic, industrial, and social crisis. Record unemployment, regional imbalances, youth unemployment, retail slowdown. All the economic voices are down, and they've been down for at least 2 years. Anger, protest, disillusion, growing inequalities. These are the common feeling on the streets in Italy, something that the progressive leaders and main commentators clearly undervalued in the months prior to the campaign. And at the end, these trends deeply affected the outcome. The players, very briefly. The Democratic Party is a party established in 2008. It's a merger of former communist, social democratic, progressive Catholic parties. It started in the 90s as a coalition called Ulivo, the Olive Tree, and slowly became a party. It was a long process that was forced by this, several defeats by the end of Berlusconi. It started as a majority party, meaning a center-left party that goes from left to center, an idea party more than a machine party, in a breakaway from the socialist tradition of centralized party. Pierluigi Bersani was elected leader with primaries in 2009. Who is Pierluigi Bersani? He used to be president of a region, the region Emilia-Romagna, capital Bologna. And so it was seen as a very solid, pragmatic leftist, is a former communist, but a man who is able to govern, to confront a government. So not the typical opposition-only former communist. Bersani changed the party into a traditional social democratic party, stronger in organization, clearly defined politically, social democrat, but smaller in terms of outreach. For many, this was a fatal mistake. The Democratic Party used primaries as a rule to elect national and local leadership and open up the party. We had the last very important primaries in November 2012 with 4 million voters, when Bersani won these primaries and won the right to run as prime minister. Just after the primaries in December, the Democratic Party is at its peak. Total visibility on the media, the campaign for the primaries obscured all the other parties and opened to a record new number of members. Not by chance. This is the lowest point for Grillo, polled at 11%. And the primaries, the Democratic Party clearly fails to run the real campaign. Successful primaries to select the leadership, wrong campaign to win government. PDL, Berlusconi, also a merger of Forza Italia and Alleanza Nazionale. Forza Italia is the traditional Berlusconi, let's say, own party. Alleanza Nazionale is the right-wing nationalistic party. The PDL is dominated by his founder and leader. The strongest years for the party are from 2007 to 2010, when the party has enjoyed massive popularity and a deep advantage over the progressive forces. problems for the PDL: lack of succession to Berlusconi, a lack of internal democracy. The PDL don't know what it will be after Berlusconi. So this was a problem that was very critical for many observers, as analysts. But Berlusconi again decided to run for elections, for these elections, after he semi-retired. I don't know if you heard this from here from Australia, but he semi-retired for a few months and then decided he wanted to go back and run this campaign because he thought he could win. And I have to say, against all the odds, against all the analysts, all the polls, he almost had it right. His allies are comprised several right-wing smaller parties and mainly the Northern League. Northern League is a party located in the north of the country. Is some say a far-right party. I would say conservative party that has two major issues: anti-immigration, anti-Muslim immigration in particular, and federalism, which in their way means less transfers of resources from the northern regions, which are the richest, to Rome, so the rest of the country. The campaign led by Berlusconi this year was focused on a few issues. No to the German austerity imposed by Monti, deletion of the property tax and other taxes introduced by the Monti government. They targeted Monti in order to avoid losing ground on the center. So they tried to distract, to expose the results of Monti government with the goal to crush his own Monti's party. So the final goal for Berlusconi was getting a result good enough to prevent the PD from having a majority in the Senate, even with Monti, and then negotiate an agreement with the Democrats themselves, which is a goal that he clearly achieved. I always stress the fact that you, from abroad, Berlusconi is very often seen as a picturesque character, but his own party showed in this election to have a wide base, a strong base of support in Italian society, going from the extreme nationalistic right to the conservative to centrist Catholics. All the segments hostile to the left in Italy. The structure of the small, medium enterprises, retail professionals that are the backbone of Italian economy are still linked with Berlusconi and the PDL in fear of the left. And these are significant, probably majority forces in the Italian society. Then we had another player, Scelta Civica, civic choice centrist party funded by Monti. So the current prime minister pledged not to become a political leader, but in December made the announcement he was funding a centrist pro-European party of civil society versus all politics. Encouraged by the country's economic and media establishment, he started with an ambition to reach 20%. The political long-term ambition was clearly to steal the centrist voters from Berlusconi, stealing the center ground from Berlusconi, attracting moderate members of Berlusconi's party and pushing the PDL to the right. They campaign on the record of Monti, his persona, his role in Europe, his refusal to bend to populistic policies. Clearly, they undervalued the opinion of the Italian public for the government. The Italian public, under stress, appreciated Monti's level of his authority, but didn't really share his policies. Last, the movement Five Star, very, very difficult to explain, still developing in a way. It started as a blog by a comedian 5 years ago, a consumer movement blog, and it became political roughly 2 years ago. They ran for local elections in 2012 with significant results, between 10 and 15%, even electing the mayor of an important city like Parma. It is a party that has an obscure internal governance. It's led by this comedian, Beppe Grillo. It has no structure, no head office, no branch in the country. Its message is an anti-Euro message, anti-Germany, anti-Monti. Against the cost of politics, as they say, so salaries of MPs, local councillors, number of MPs, violently against the political and economic elite, bordering class warfare sometimes. promotion of direct democracy, online elections. They are clearly a mix of leftist policies, for example, minimum salary for everyone, without stating where they would find the resources, and right-wing policies, anti-immigration stances. So they kept together very, very different positions. They built consensus in the hopeless, poorer working area. And Grillo understood he had to remain at the center of the protest, not being put in a box or a right force, an extreme left force. No. He wanted to get votes, and he did, from both right and left. In fact, he got 26% of the votes drawing from both center, right, and people that were disillusioned by politics. What happened after the election? I have still a few minutes. After the initial shock, the PD tried to take advantage of the majority in the lower house. Without the Democratic Party, no government could be formed, and this was the starting point of negotiation. The 26% obtained by the party was more than a disappointment. It showed that borders of the left-wing party designed by Bersani, its inability to move beyond the traditional borders of the left, which are a minority in Italy, cannot obtain a full majority for the party as is expected. So he had two options: try an agreement with the Five Star Movement or a grand coalition with Berlusconi. He chose to try with the first option. Why? Mainly because the grassroots of the Democratic Party are leaned towards Five Star Movement, thinking that the protest movement is, in fact, a left-wing movement. Something that has to be still demonstrated. And in fact, this negotiation didn't work. Grillo rejected the deal, and Bersani was left in the middle. This lasted for almost a month with great frustration, as you can imagine, on the Italian public. The agreement with Grillo impossible. Bersani resisted a grand coalition with Berlusconi. That was the other option. So it was impossible for the president Napolitano to dissolve the new parliament and also to going back to the polls in a matter of weeks without the reform of the electoral law that could lead to an identical result of no majority. So there are no Greek solution, as it's called. Basically, Greeks went to the polls only a few weeks after the election that came as a stalemate. There's no Dutch solution, mainly basically a negotiation of right and left, and there is no agreement with Grillo. So that led to a total stalemate. Therefore, political forces, after more than a month of negotiation, decided to wait for the election of the new president of the Republic. The president is elected by the two chambers in a joint session, and the new president is going to be instrumental in the final outcome of this crisis. A consensus president like Napolitano will now push for a consensus government, a coalition government. The presidential election saw a big drama. We don't have much time to speak about this, but I can only say that the different lines within the Democratic Party have led to 6 votes to elect the president, so changing lines at least 3 times, and the resignation of Bersani only on Friday night, only a few days ago. The Democratic Party is actually the biggest loser of these elections. So to go to the close of these elections and their aftermath leave the Italian political system in a state of weakness, still in transition. None of the parties have a strong long-term project. The PD, still the strongest party, maybe the last organized party, but we live in Italy in a time when blocs can get more votes than hundreds of local branches. More deeply, it's a party that lacks an identity in between a traditional socialist party and a bigger, truly democratic, wider tent. The 2013 election showed that the left core vote in Italy is, as it has been from 1948, a strong, reliable, organized minority, never a majority. On the other side, Berlusconi proved to be again the best campaigner. The PDL enjoys the biggest core base support, I would say, the conservative camp, the anything but the left electorate. But it is threatened by the lonely leadership of Berlusconi, a man of 76 years old, without a clear successor, so with the clear possibility of a meltdown of the party when Berlusconi retires. they need to find a new unifier of the center-right. United, the center-right is a majority in the country. Separated, it will not make it. Northern League also on the retreat. Immigration, federalism are issued not anymore central in the political narrative. Scelta Civica, Monti's party, will probably disappear in the next elections, if they will have next election soon. The center at the moment is squeezed by a strong Berlusconi, the PD, and the protest vote. Grillo, that's a big question mark. Grillo has registered a decline in the few weeks of this new parliament from 26 to around 24%. But I would say that till the economic crisis is so strong in the country, Grillo will have political space, drawing from desperate, not only working class, now middle class youth. So they will be strong till the crisis is strong. Do we have one more minute?
Yep.
To close, I would like to... I think there are four lessons that from the Italian election, we just focused on Italy now, but can go to Europe and can be significant trends in Europe. One, Europe and the euro issue, the euro crisis, is the main dominant issue of the campaign. We have seen it. We've seen it in Greece. We've seen it in France. We will see it in Germany. The campaign revolves around this issue, an issue that affects each and every dimension of politics, economic, social, fiscal, environmental, even foreign policy now. Other national issues, ethical issues, immigration, for example, used to be at the center stage during previous election, have all been sidelined. So what used to be a foreign issue, Europe, is now fully the domestic issue. So the contrast with the 2000 election is fought on domestic ground is stark. Second element, the continuing conservative grip on European politics. After Hollande's victory in France last year, Rome was seen as the next step for the rise of progressives in Europe, a wave that was supposed to arrive to Berlin in September, the real crucial moment for Europe, German elections in September. This was not only a political game. The idea behind that is a new political map of Europe. More progressive governments could change the policy of austerity and embrace a new pro-growth policy. This is not happening, and the poor performance of the social democrats in Italy shows it. With the exception of France, all other major countries are still under conservative governments, the UK, Spain, Poland, Sweden, and probably Germany in September. Third point, the emergence of populistic party across Europe, and the decline of established traditional parties. Extremist anti-system parties have always been contesting elections in Europe, but now they are becoming competitive forces, often around 15-20% of the electorate. Grillo got 26%. It is important to see what they have in common. First, they are no left or right, as I said. They play in the center. They take advantage of crisis, attracting disillusioned voters. They put Europe at the center of their propaganda. And this is curious because they have success both in southern countries, for example, Italy or Spain or Greece, where they put Europe and the anti-German feeling, but also in northern countries, for example, the True Finns in Finland, a populistic party that ran on basically saying the government, you're too generous against others. So they, from different angles, they are succeeding, they are growing in Europe. And this is, I would say, parallel to this, a decline in traditional parties across the continent. If you see the Socialist Party in France, the ruling party is under 30%. Similar numbers from the PP in Spain. These are parties in government. The PD in Italy is 29%. This opens, of course, a huge democratic and legitimacy problem for these parties. And the last point, I would say, the rise of Eurosceptic politics. We just talked about the populistic anti-European forces and how they're growing. But now the anti-Europe rhetoric is making inroads also in mainstream parties. The CDU, CSU, the Liberal Party in Germany, both these parties, they were founders of Europe. And the anti-Europe rhetoric in the parties is growing exponentially. You could see, we want a different Europe, we don't want the Brussels bureaucrats to rule our country. You could hear this maybe in the UK, but now you hear it in parties that have founded, have established Europe. And clearly, they are doing this to blame an external entity, the EU, for the policies they have to make in their country, policies that are at the moment unsellable to the public. So it might be useful in the short term, but this creates a vicious circle, because at first, government parties use this argument to defend their policy. But in the long term, they feed the growing of their own enemies, so the populistic parties that are exploiting the difficult situation in Italy. So this is the end of it, and okay. I know not great news, but about Europe. But that's how the situation is. So
thank
I'll
you.
Be happy to take your questions.
No, we're going. Yeah,
yeah, sure, 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 sure.
So Giulia Massotti is going to say a few words about Europe and Italy and contemporary Europe, and then we'll go to questions and discussion with both.
Okay. Yeah. Good evening. Thank you very much. I will try to address the European implications of the Italian elections, and I will go on from where Luca left. So I would like to thank you for this great opportunity, which I have to say honestly is a little bit challenging, because I don't know if you know it, but actually speaking about European issues, it's not felt to be like the sexiest topic to talk about, even with European public. So I don't know what would be the impression of an Australian one. So I don't know what's the impression that you have got from Luca's speech, but maybe you have seen that he was telling you that there was a great difference between what we were expecting from the elections and what we have got. And that was exactly something related, as he said, with Europe. So for the first time, Europe was back on the agenda for a European, for a national campaign. So I would say those were running electoral campaigns based on a pro-European message, which was strictly linked to an austerity economic policy, were defeated. So we had the two parties that were supporting Monti's government and the new born party of Monti himself. The one who was rising the votes was the five-star movement of Grillo, who was also leading a campaign basically eurosceptic and populistic. So we have this direction. Those who were supporting Europe failed. Those who were going against Europe won. So, what does it tell us? Tell us that we have just experienced a missed historic opportunity. Italy has always been pro-European. Italy was among the founding members of the first European community back in 1951. And this country has always been pro-European, but always at the elite level. It has always been an elite-driven process. So this time, we had the opportunity with the European topics back on the agenda to talk to people about what they were asked. I mean, people were suffering the economic crisis in Italy, and our politicians who supported austerity measures weren't able to tell them why. And so that gave the opportunity to Grillo and others to raise their opportunities for their future. This was so a missed opportunity also because in 2011 and in 2012 we could have started a new era for Italy in Europe. In the middle of 2011, there was a moment in which the Italian destiny was affected massively by Europe. That was, I don't know if you are aware of, letter addressed by the former president of the European Central Bank, Trichet, and the now president of the ECB, Mario Draghi, to the Italian government. And they were calling for economic measures that our country needed to recover. And they were extremely important also for their impact on the stability of the whole Eurozone. After this letter, as Luca was telling, there was the end of Berlusconi government, and within 2 weeks, in November 2011, we had our former governor of the Italian Central Bank, Mario Draghi, was appointed as president of the ECB, and then Mario Monti was asked by our president of the Republic to become our prime minister of a technocratic government. Mario Monti and Mario Draghi were felt from Europe to be the right man to have at that moment in Europe and in Italy. Mario Monti was twice commissioner in two different commissions from 1995 to 2004, first as a commissioner for internal market and then commissioner for
competition.
Thanks. I was a competitor. So it was really felt to be a very good leader to ensure our economic future both in Italy and in Europe. But this intervention from Brussels or from Frankfurt wasn't felt to be fair by Italians. And that was a major point that was understood by Grillo and that is understood also somewhere else in Europe. He was talking about populism and euroscepticism. That's something that is spreading all over Europe. We have Marine Le Pen, who is the chief of the National Front in France, who has just called for opening from Grillo to her party in order to build a common strategy against European austerity and European policies driven just from Brussels and Frankfurt. And we have also within the same country, which is Germany, a new movement, which is Allianz for Germany, which is completely eurosceptical, completely against Brussels. And it's something that has to make us understand that this missed opportunity was a missed opportunity for Italy to have a leading role in Europe, having France with Hollande fading away, having Merkel's Germany in a stalemate until September. We could have been maybe in a good position with Mario Draghi and Mario Monti to have an impact. All over Europe.
I think we might leave it there. It's a good spot to leave
sorry.
it.
Sorry. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, just come over there. Stay there. You know that guy. Luke, you come back up here. So I know there'll be some questions. So thanks to Luca and Julia. So we're ready to go to questions. There's one down the back. Can we keep them brief because we're trying to finish around 7? Yeah.
Do either or both of you think that this is the result of disillusion over entrenched corruption and feather bedding, not only in Italy but also in the European Commission, highly paid bureaucrats telling poor people how to live and without any impact on themselves personally, imposing austerity measures? There are a number of leading economists around the world that say that austerity has never worked and will never work.
Right, so is it... Well, reaction to
you mean the success of Grillo mainly?
Yeah.
Well, definitely yes. I think that the main focus of anger in Grillo is still domestic. There is the rage against you mentioned corruption and the inefficiency of the Italian political structure. I think this is the main force that drives Grillo's vote. Clearly, they campaign also on the anti-European. But I think if I have to answer, the main is still the rage against their own representatives in Italy. They are running a campaign against the political class. That's how they say it. The anti-European rhetoric is reinforcement of this. But I would say an anti-bureaucracy, anti-corruption crusade. And of course, in Italy, they found a clearly ground for this. Yes.
There we go.
Thanks very much. Thank you for your comments. Interesting your remarks about the feeling towards Brussels. The European Commission and the European institutions are the creations of the member states. And you look at a lot of the Monti report for the economic future of Europe and so on is a very sound document. Yet all of the rules that the member states collectively sign up to, they then ignore with great abandon, particularly when it came to the Stability and Growth Pact, preserve the euro.
Sure.
So how there's a fundamental disconnect, it seems. On the hand, at domestic level, you have lots of Brussels bashing. You have Brussels setting policies to try and sort the problems out. So where does this end? It seems to be, you know, a great mess.
Julie, you want to take that?
Yep.
Okay.
I would say that the point here is that it's not that easy to answer. What I would say is that, again, Monti could have been the right person. Just for one thing, you talked about Monti report and the Stability and Growth Pact. There was one occasion a few months ago, and it was, I guess, the first time that there was a prime minister from a EU member state that was blaming Germany for not following the rules that were in the pact. So maybe he could have been reliable on this and could have been an opportunity to, be a little bit more coherent between the European level and the national level, I guess.
I could take your point about the anti-European group being the successful ones, but what are the anti-European groups suggesting Italy should do? Are they suggesting you should drop out of the euro? Are they suggesting a way of getting around the problem of debt and unemployment that will actually work? I mean, it's easy to be in opposition or to be anti, I understand that, but what are the ways in which they see they can make a difference and get out of the problem?
Well, yes. Unfortunately, to repeat what it's written in Grillo's Movement Five Star program, there is the withdrawal from euro, in the euro, or, having better said, a referendum on the withdrawal from the euro, but they would support it. And second, he said we are not obliged to pay all our debts. So very, very, hardcore message. I think that they have not yet really produced a coherent policy on this. Frankly speaking, my feeling is that they have capitalized on this. There is no policy. So if you ask them, they would just say, in general terms, we go out from the euro, but nothing much more than that. Consider that it's the same. They propose a salary, they call the citizenship salary, for all of 1,000 euros, without explaining where they would find the funds. So I think that, but that's, I don't want to be, you know, too hard. I mean, is there really new in Parliament? They probably will find some more solid program, but they're not there yet.
But a quick yes-no answer to Berlusconi, which is the other part. Is Berlusconi's group still committed to staying within the European Union and the Eurozone?
Yes, no, they are right. Critical of Germany, anti-German, but not before the withdrawal, no.
You want to add to that? Okay. All right, there's a question here. Got to be quick, okay?
Right, just in regards to the one of the previous questions, is that being a national election, obviously, people will be focusing on the national campaign. And the reason is, one of the reasons why that no one had a majority was that none of them presented a national plan, an outline, a plan that if we follow these rules, outline policies, you will get the economic growth and so forth. Or they just say left or right, or in vague, very vague terminology to the public, or do they specifically give a specific vision, basically? Did any of the political parties give a vision, a national theme?
Okay, right. So will he give a national theme?
Well, I think that, yes, it's like the Italians didn't like what the program was. They have had the Monti's program for a year and a half and didn't really like it, or that's how it seemed. And they perceived the Democratic Party as following the Brussels consensus. So yes, there were articulate plans, I would say, but clearly the maybe not so defined plan as I just mentioned by Grillo, was the Berlusconi's prospect of a cutting taxes and stop following the austerity measures. They had more inroads in the electorate. They could vote for a coherent plan on Europe, and they didn't, or they did in not in a majority terms.
Can I just so I come in? Oh, let's go here. Okay.
What was the voting turnout? Was it any different from previous?
That's an important question.
Question about the voting turnout.
It was 75, yeah. Which was significantly lower than usual, at least 5% lower, which I think gives you an important sign that there is also a significant part of society that didn't go to vote. So potentially another consistent number of votes for anti-systemic parties, I would say. We used to have between 80 and 85, and we had less than 75. So yes, there was a decline. Still high turnout as traditional Italian elections, lower.
Can I ask Julia, because I think you focused on this, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, you were saying that Monti arrived as Prime Minister because he was appointed by the President, along with technocrats, which means that none of them are politicians, which means obviously that none of them elected, which means all of them are bureaucrats. And that pressure came from Brussels or Frankfurt or somewhere in the EU. I mean, isn't there a kind of democratic problem here? I think within a country like Australia or New Zealand or Britain or America, if we were told that we had to have a group of bureaucrats, none of whom had been elected, governing us until we behaved ourselves, I doubt that an Anglo-Saxon country would have accepted that. So how come the Italians accepted that so readily for a year or so, that they would have as a Prime Minister Mr. Monti and has as their politicians, not one of whom had been elected? Or as the ministers, that is?
So let's say about democratic deficit. We have to distinguish between the European level and the national level. We have always been told that at European level there is a big, big democratic deficit, which is not completely true, because we have institutions as a European Parliament, which are directly elected by the people, and we are We have other institutions, as the Council of the European Union and the European Council, which are actually hyper-democratic because they gather together ministers which have been elected directly within each European member state. This is one thing. Then, yes, we have the problem with the bureaucrats, but this is something that we have in every country. Every politician who is elected in an assembly needs to have someone to advise him. This is one thing. Then, speaking about Monti and the perception of a technocratic government, first of all, this is something which is foreseen by our constitution. Secondly, it was something that we really needed. Still, our parliament was there, and it could have passed lots of laws in the meantime, but it didn't. And that's why, coming back to our former question, people were so detached by our traditional parties, because they've been waiting for more than 1 year for laws as the new electoral law or the anti-corruption law that they couldn't pass.
Yeah, if I may,
very briefly, yeah.
Yeah, just first, yes, we have a system that, a tradition in Italy that it was not the first time we had technocratic government. Government in 1995, so it was not the first time. And second, it came after 2 years of political warfare that gone beyond any limit, 2010, 2011. So I think that at the end of the story, people were, Italian public was relieved to have a year and a half of peace, of technocratic government. They didn't leave it as badly.
So final question, Ian.
Date of the next election, Luca.
Well, it's happening. If we have a government next week, which is the most likely, but it might be wrong, I would say a year now. There are European elections in May 2014, so they can go together, or end of next year, not more than that.
So if you get an election, if you get a government next week, who's the head of the government? What's the politics of the government?
Head of government is a mystery. Maybe Giuliano Amato, another technocratic style.
So what party is he from?
Leftist, but independent. So a kind of another Monti, but with a more political government. Probably you will see political ministers. That's what they are negotiating right now. There's still no outcome. The policy is pro-European Monti style with a broader support. So both Democrats and Berlusconi supporting in Parliament, and clearly, unfortunately, leaving a lot of room for Grillo to capitalize on this. The next budget will be a very tough budget still.
And I'll just end up with Giulia, because we've mentioned Grillo. What about Mr. Berlusconi? Is he behaving himself now and likely to continue to behave himself? What's Mr. Berlusconi up to?
Many things.
This is very difficult question. I would say that he will stay on the Italian political arena. Scene for a long time.
Yeah. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to know that parties will continue in Italy, both in Mr. Berlusconi's place and elsewhere. So that's all good news. Look, Italy is obviously, I think, the number 8th economy in the world. It's a very important part of Europe. And Australia, of course, has deep historical connections to Italy over more than a century. So when Anne and I learned that Luca and Julia were coming here today, we thought at late notice we'd put something on. It'll be a busy week, but I'm very pleased they came here. It's a significant part of, right now, it's a significant part of Italian political history, and what's going to happen in the next week, the next month, the next year and a half is also very interesting. So I'm very grateful to Luca Barda and Julia Massotti for coming here tonight and sharing us their views. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.